Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
This is the first installment of what may be an ongoing series called Rook on the Road. Rook is Brendan's last name. I believe we all know what the road is. And he, along with Rebecca Fife, went into the woods looking for shrooms.
All right. So I went mushroom hunting for the first ever Rook on the Road experience. And I got to tell you, it was a blast. I sat down with Rebecca Fife. It was more than I could have imagined, honestly. We got to go out in the forest, pick a couple of mushrooms, and then we went back and cooked them, and they were delicious. Check it out.
Come here, mushrooms. Mushy, 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 mushy mushrooms. Maybe the mushroom call will work. This is exciting.
I'm Rebecca Fife, and I'm a member of the Illinois Mycological Association. That's the Mushroom Club. So, Brendan, did you think it was pretty weird when I told you that I had to blindfold you before I took you to my mushroom spot?
Yeah, I was absolutely terrified, actually.
I scared you.
Just a little bit. You were like, I'm going to blindfold you and spin you around. You have to have no idea where my spot is. But I trusted you. Well, I can see why, because as we went exploring today, it's hard to find those little guys.
So that was one of my most reliable honey holes. The morels come up there every year like clockwork, and I have a lot of those. And the way that I find them is I drive around and I look for stands of elm trees. And so we went into the deciduous forest, basically mixed hardwoods, and it was primarily an elm forest.
Okay.
And do you know why I look for elms when I drive around?
I don't, because I know nothing about mushrooms.
Okay.
So tell me.
We'll start there. So elms are the trees that in our area, Chicago, Land, Cook County, have a mycorrhizal or symbiotic underground relationship with the mycelial portion of the morel organism. So the part that you and I hunted for today, that's not the organism itself. I described to you a little bit, what part of the organism that is. It's here just for reproduction. So it happens in the spring. And once the ground temperatures are warm for a little while, there are some key around, like it's when the lilacs bloom, it's when the May apples are in bloom, it's, somewhat around Mother's Day, but the season can be a week long or it can be a month long. And we were, right at the end of the season today. I went out a week ago, and because the spring was so cold, it was a little early in our area. And then with 3 days in a row above 80 degree heat, I knew that the season would be cashed. So, the mushrooms were starting to dry, and today's definitely the last day. In some areas, they call them the sponge mushroom because they don't look like, your colorful dish sponge, but they look like a natural sea sponge, basically.
Exactly. And they have these like crevices and stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. Those are called pores on the mushroom. So some people call them sponge. And, before you find your first one, it's hard to, know what they look like or pick them out of the leaf litter. But then I say that once you find one, it's almost like you get your morel goggles on, and then that pattern just stands out to you more. It's like the subsequent ones are easier to find than the first one.
Absolutely. Once you pointed out the first one, I was like, I know what I'm looking for now. And then after a while, I found a couple on my own, which I was pretty proud of.
Yeah, you got really good at spotting them and cutting them. And, I think that you were able to assess the quality after a while, too. Being the end of the season, there were some that were starting to get a little dry, still certainly edible. And then there were some that were still pretty lush because maybe they were like in a slightly moister area or they were just in the shade.
I got into hunting morels because my family is from Shelby County, from a town called Cowden, and they were really into hunting morels. So my father learned mushroom hunting from his grandfather, whose name was Gentry Ernest Jones, but he was, he was pretty famous in the county, and his nickname was Growler Jones. And our mushroom hunting skills were handed down from him, probably generations before that too. And one of the things that he taught us is to look for the phenomenology that occurs at the same time as the morels are up to know when to go in the woods. So one of the things that we look for is when lilacs are in bloom and when mayapples are in bloom. And my great-grandfather used to say, when the oak leaf is the size of a mouse's ear, it's time to look for morels.
All right. Well, do we see any of those here?
So maybe we'll find an oak tree so you can see if the leaves are the size of a mouse's ear.
Let's go. We also will have to find a mouse.
I'll pop into the woods because there's always some kind of mushroom. In the spring, my favorite mushroom is the morel, but their season is so short that I'm also looking for mushrooms like chicken of the woods and other...
I've had that one before.
Oh, good.
Yeah, back in the scouts.
There's always something I'm into that it's fun to look for. And even when there's absolutely no edible mushrooms, I really just love mushrooms for their aesthetic beauty. I think they're fascinating. I think it's important to be into mushroom hunting. I want people to get into mushroom hunting because there's a lot of different desires people have for use of public lands and forest preserve lands. For instance, you know, some people want to build a horse arena to host the Olympics equestrian event in Illinois, and others want more picnic shelter spaces, and people who have dogs want big open grasslands. Well, mushroom hunters, we want mature standing trees, and I really think that that's the best land use from a conservation perspective and what we leave to subsequent generations, and also what provides the most habitat for wildlife. So I think if more people got into mushroom hunting, that more people would just automatically become environmentalists and really want to protect the standing forests.
So they like a lot of rain. They like moist soil. So you want moist conditions. But once the soil gets this wet, you kind of need to head a different direction.
Okay.
Because they don't like to grow in an area that's this soggy.
All right. So like a mushroom hunting song you sing?
Yeah, actually, to learn the binomial nomenclature, so the Linnaean taxonomy system, to learn those names for every mushroom, I tend to make up songs about them, especially to help my daughter learn. So I don't have a song about morels, but there's another mushroom that is out in the fall, and it's called the jack-o'-lantern mushroom, you know, or in Europe it's known as the foxfire mushroom because it's bioluminescent. It actually,
awesome.
Yeah, it actually glows, and I wanted to help my daughter when she was about 4 learn the binomial name for it. So I made up the song, and it goes, "If you put omphalotus into your soup, you are surely gonna barf and poop omphalotus. Omphalotus, yeah, don't eat the jack-o'-lantern omphalotus." So it's Omphalotus eludens, and its common name in the United States is the jack-o'-lantern mushroom. So this is a perfect example of an elm tree that has died and is sheeting its bark. Its bark tends to come off in sheets, and what you can see, yeah, exactly, and what you can see under the bark are the burrowing pattern from one of two elm beetles. One is the native elm beetle, and the other one is the European elm bark beetle.
Do they burrow differently where you can differentiate?
No, not really. Their evidence pretty much looks the same, but the sort of sad thing about it is they are the vector for Dutch elm disease.
Yeah.
So the way that Dutch elm disease spreads from tree to tree is the beetle, you know, lays its eggs here, and when those babies emerge, they carry the fungus from one infected tree that's infected with Dutch elm disease, and they go to other trees, and then they infect the xylem layer, which is the part of the tree that carries water back and forth. So it literally becomes plugged. The tree almost
starts to dehydrate.
Yeah, it starts to dehydrate because of the infection.
And that's what's causing all these sheeting of bark.
Exactly.
Another mushroom.
Who's gonna cut this one?
I think finders cutters. You found it.
Okay.
It's not a great expression, but it's the one I'm using.
720 WGN, Rook on the Road with Rebecca Fife going mushroom hunting. And the more I hear it, not only do I hear very informative facts and figures, but things that make me want to ask some questions. which happens next on 720 WGN.
If you put omphalotus into your soup, you are surely going to barf and poop omphalotus. Omphalotus, yeah, don't eat the jack-o'-lantern omphalotus.
Amazing. Rebecca 5, 720 WGN. That's worth it right there.
That was a lot of fun.
That is a lot of fun.
It was a whole lot of fun doing that one.
That is just a brief segment from something we call Rook on the Road, and we had the first installment with Rebecca Fife going into the woods for mushroom hunting. Now, here's the deal. What's with the blindfold?
So, I guess that mushroom hunters are very secretive about their spots. So, I couldn't know at all where we were. So, we met up a little bit away. And she was like, "You got to keep this secret.
How far do you think you had to walk?"
Probably a couple blocks in the woods. If I could estimate it, it wasn't as bad as it sounds.
Wow, but
it was a lot of fun, and I learned a whole lot about fungus and mushrooms that I never wanted to know. But I know.
But the idea that the mushroom hunter, the serious mushroom hunter, is so territorial that they won't take someone to their quote-unquote spot unless they're blindfolded.
It's a secret.
No doubt.
She kept telling me, "You better not come back and take my mushrooms next season." And I was like, "Oh, don't worry. I'll have to find my own patch of elms."
I think your mushrooms are safe, Rebecca.
Oh, yeah, I think so.
You know, you can text and call, by the way, at 312-981-7200. That number goes to both places. I got a great text here from 309. Beautiful array of mushrooms being used in a variety of dishes, etc. Just got in the house. Heard you talking about mushroom hunting. I've been mushroom hunting almost since I was able to walk. Grew up on a farm in rural El Paso in Woodford County. Here are the latest.
Mm-mm. And they do look good. I believe one of those are actually morels.
So, what about this chicken in the woods?
Chicken in the woods, yeah. We found it once when I was scouting. And
does it look like a chicken or something?
It's like this. It's a big. I'll have to find a picture for you.
It tastes like chicken.
Yes, it does.
Seriously?
Uh huh.
A mushroom that tastes like chicken.
It's wild.
I mean, like wild mushroom, it tastes like chicken.
Mm hmm.
Right off the ground or wherever you find it.
Mm hmm.
Now, are these mushrooms? Well, they're just sitting there. They're not like, I mean, you can spot them.
So the mushrooms, the things that we typically think of are
the cap.
Yeah. So it pops up when the environment, the symbiotic relationship between tree and fungus is threatened. So
really?
You'll never see them unless the fungus feels threatened. So it pops up, these mushrooms, and it releases its spores so it can travel and find another host tree to have a symbiotic relationship with. And so what she was talking about with this Dutch elm disease is what triggers the fungus to be like, "Oh my goodness, my tree is dying." It sprouts up the fungus and it releases its spores and it travels through the wind or whatever and it finds a new host.
So when we see mushrooms,
mm-hmm.
we should then assume that fungus is in trauma.
Yes.
Wow.
At least that's how I understand it.
I mean, if anybody's going to know, it's Rebecca.
Yeah, and she was really informative.
It's a good thing she likes this program because I have a feeling the little song that we just played that she performed might become a semi-regular feature.
Yeah, I think she'd love that because I told her, I was like, "We're going to play this back." And she said, "Okay."
Yeah, that's you got to love her.